You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the only daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, available on iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm your host, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, coming to you all on this Thursday. It's a game day, not here in New Orleans, but in Sacramento. Game's going to be on TNT, national television, for your New Orleans Pelicans as DeMarcus Cousins makes his return to Sacramento to face the Kings for the first time since the trade. Obviously, there's a lot of intrigue about this one. And you know, is he going to get booed? What's going to happen? But also, if you're a Pelicans fan, you're less concerned with that and more concerned with what's going on with Anthony Davis. So I'll talk about all that and more. Plus, we've got an interview with Scott Alexander here in today's edition of Locked On Pelicans. So let's lead off with the Anthony Davis news, because that, frankly, is the most important thing to this team, the Pelicans. And we don't have much of an update, at least when I recorded this podcast on Wednesday for you all. It was that Anthony Davis had an MRI yesterday, maybe just likely as a precaution. It sounds like at Portland's arena, they do have an MRI machine. Is it an MRI machine? Is it just an MRI? Anyway, they have a thing that does MRIs there in the arena where they were able to give him one, it sounds like, unless they took him somewhere else. We don't really know. But the MRI was done very quickly, which is rather surprising. The good news is it came back negative. Biggest thing, it sounds like there's some swelling in AD's knee, which maybe will keep him out as of, you know, late last night and early this morning and today. He was listed as day-to-day questionable, so it sounds like 50-50 if he's going to play in this game against the Sacramento Kings. But, you know, I'm not overly concerned. The Kings have some talent, and Scott and I are going to talk about this. But overall, the Pels have more than them. You still have, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, who put up 39 the other night and showed why he is one of the better players in the league and that he can kind of single-handedly win you a game almost if you get some production from other guys. Portland's a good team, and the Pelicans played incredibly, incredibly well against them, and got to give you hope for this game tonight against Sacramento, even if AD is out, which frankly is kind of what I expect based off just my early feel for things. I think he's not going to be playing. It should be okay. The team should have enough talent to be able to win this one. Hopefully they do. We are certainly going to find out. Some other news that I want to touch on has more to do with the podcast here. We are in the process of switching hosts, so from moving from Audioboom to Panoply and their app called Megaphone to upload these and host the podcast. So it might mean that the RSS feeds are kind of out of sync for a little bit. I know most of my users listen to the podcast on iTunes. It will be showing up there. There may be a hiccup or two for the next couple of days. Hopefully we'll get it all sorted out by Monday at the very latest. But if you don't see it showing up on iTunes, that is exactly why. I always tweet out the direct links to it. You can always get them that way. You know, Wednesday's episode is still available on Audioboom. All of them should be on there for the foreseeable future. All of them are going to be available also directly from Megaphone. I'll be tweeting that link out once I've got everything set up. Just keep an eye out for that. Update your RSS feeds if you pop them into another player. We're working on all of that internally, but this is just going to be a pretty smooth transition. Might have a hiccup here or there. No big deal, hopefully, though. So before I get to the interview with Scott Alexander, my good friend, who I'm really excited to have on because the interview was a lot of fun and we went all over the place with certain things. So it's always fun when those interviews just kind of go directions you weren't expecting. Make sure you're subscribed and you've listened to the Locked On NBA podcast. Get caught up with news around the league. There are constantly things happening. The NBA season, we're only four games in and it's like we've been playing for months already. It's like the offseason never even stopped. The Suns are a mess. There's injuries everywhere. It's kind of like a lot of fun to keep following all the drama a little bit. It's like better than what are those? Are they on TNT or A&E? I don't know what channel those kind of drama shows are on, but like one of those. It's like what this is. The NBA is like this the entire time. It's a lot of fun. So before you listen to the interview with Scott Alexander coming up right next, make sure you click over and subscribe to the Locked On NBA podcast. And this is pretty awesome. I'm excited to have this guy on here on Locked On Pelicans with me, Mr. Scott Alexander of Primetime Sports with Scott Alexander here in New Orleans. Also been around the NBA since 1993, worked with TNT and Turner and Fox Sports. You were also an agent, right, Scott?
Yeah, I did the agent thing. I started up a thing with a pretty popular football agent, Pat Dye Jr., who, you know, he's got like 60 NFL players. His dad was Coach of Auburn, and he wanted to do basketball. So I had this TV show where guys like LeBron James and Chris Paul and Zach Randolph, and I could go through everybody from Kobe to Dwight Howard from 1996 to 2004. Had used to come down to Atlanta when they were in high school, and they, you know, they would appear on this show for Fox Sports Net. So he said, you know what? I see all these guys on this TV show. He asked my boss, who he was friends with, how he knew them. He goes, just know them. They stay at his house. It kind of, one thing led to another, and he hired me, and you know, I did the agent thing with him for about 5-6 years, and went on my own for a few more before I decided I wanted to come back home to New Orleans, which I had been gone for like 25 years. So that's kind of how it started.
I think you told me the story, and maybe I've just somehow imagined this, though. You made LeBron fly coach and wouldn't get him first class to come down for the show.
But he's in high school now. He flew coach. That's funny you remember that. He flew coach the first time. To get him down the second year, I had to do first class because the first year, I never really brought juniors in high school ever. In fact, he's the only one. But he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, as you probably remember, the chosen one, which he probably came into my office and signed King James on it without me asking him to. I was like, wow, okay, dude. But and now he said what I actually feel now. He says, one day you're going to be glad I did that. And I'm very glad at this point. But you know, his mom had come with him the first time with the mom's boyfriend at the time. And, you know, I didn't even think about it. We do fly with people regularly. But what happened after I saw that cover and I saw the quote in the middle of that article, and it said Danny Ainge, you know, who wasn't with the Celtics then, I believe. I think he was still with the Suns. But he had worked with us when I worked with Craig Sager for years. He had been He and Vernon Lundquist were, you know, play-by-play and analysts, and you know, Craig was on the sidelines, and I was his producer doing all the bull stuff. But so I called Danny and I said, "Listen, you have a quote in this article that says this junior in high school, LeBron James, that you would trade everybody in the NBA but five people. Is that true?" And I said, "If so, who are the five?" And I named them, and he said I was right, but that left a whole nother group because it was at that time Tracy McGrady, Shaq, and Kobe, and Tim Duncan, and at the moment. But that's Nowitzki and Paul Pierce. I said you would take this guy as a junior high school over all these guys right now, and he said absolutely. So at that point, I said I got to get this guy on the show. Well, the next thing you know, he comes down.
Yeah, so, ended up being kind of true with everything here, which is – no, I remember you told me that story, and I'm like, I don't know many people who'd be like, LeBron, you're flying coach here, but I like
– Well, he was LeBron. By the way, the fifth guy was Garnett. That's who it was. But he was LeBron. He became LeBron next year when, you know, you were hearing about the Hummer in high school and you're hearing about the pager and all the other stuff, you know, in the suits and all that. So that's when I actually had to fly 10 people down if I wanted to get him and fly them all. So the first year they just stayed at my house. The second time, no, I was putting them in a penthouse.
Yeah, probably getting a little bit more expensive.
Four seasons down the street.
With everything. So you mentioned Kevin Garnett, and that's a good transition because, you know, Anthony Davis this year has done a lot of Kevin Garnett-like things, though he left last night or the other night's game early against Portland. So you're a hoops guy. You're one of like the biggest hoops guys here in the city of New Orleans. What have you seen from this Pelicans team? They're 1-3 so far, not an ideal record, but their losses are to good teams. They won against the one team they should have won. What have you seen so far?
Well, I'm glad you said that point because going into the season, if we take the rose-colored Pelicans off, which is hard for me to do. I'm admittedly kind of home in a lot of ways, but you know, I lived in Atlanta for a long time and I worked for national stuff. So I look at it like this. I'm like, well, they're favored to win one of those games, right? That's it. They were favored to beat the Lakers and they did. They almost blew that one.
I've seen a team
that is maddeningly inconsistent. You know what I mean? I mean they make you feel really good at times. They resort to just making you want to pull your hair out. And that seems to be 5 years since I've been back. I guess this would be the sixth season since I've been back home. And it's rough. Well, I know once Davis went out, you knew you were climbing uphill in that game, even though you fought back and you did some really nice things and took a couple leads after you were down. But what I've seen is a team that's struggling to find an identity. Once Rondo was out, they had a team that couldn't penetrate, couldn't do any of those things that you like to do to get guys open. And Jameer Nelson remains to be seen, but he's certainly a step in the right direction to helping that. So the key to winning is obviously getting easy shots, and they're not able to get a lot of those.
No, I mean, they have moments where they are, and the offense looks good, and you see shots in the – not even just in the paint, but in the restricted area, and then behind the three-point line. But then they hit periods where it's, like, all long twos, and everything just kind of goes away from what Alvin Gentry says their identity is with ball movement and things. And, you know, is that due to coaching? Because if he keeps harping on this point and then you don't see it in the game, is it the players or is it coaching, do you think, that causes them to get away from the offense that they should be running?
Well, it's a little bit. Listen, we know it's both, right? I hate to cop out with that answer, but I'm going to say it like this. Boogie, when he's on, is ridiculous. But if you notice, when he got in that little groove, the offense was moving the ball a little bit, and those threes that he was hitting were mostly open. And then you saw, I felt that he felt he had to take the entire team on. He felt he was feeling it, and he shot them right out of it by shooting other threes. I can think of three off the top of my head that weren't in the lead of the offense. He was just straight up one-on-one with the guy, and he saw the guy in a little space, and he was putting it up. Yeah, that's something Steph Curry and Klay Thompson can do on a regular basis. And I'm not saying Boogie's not a good three-point shooter, because for his size, he's excellent. But he's not a guy that's going to hit that consistently. And when he's playing in the rhythm of the offense and he's going in transition or, you know, he's around and he gets that wide open three, he'll kick it down every time. But I think as much as he shot them back into the game, he shot them out of it as well. Now, as far as the coach goes, it's your job. Hey, after that happens once and you know Boogie's proclivity to do that and kind of get in a roll and say, hey, if I miss the first one, where am I going to miss the next one? You got to call time and talk to the guy. I mean, say, hey, listen, you were doing this right way this time. We know that Alvin has his limitations, and Alvin, I feel bad in a lot of ways because Alvin has had to deal with a roster that's less than full. As we know, last year, obviously, the injuries were bad. The year before, they were historic. But there comes a time that you have to really deal with what you're working with and make the most of it. And I'm not always seeing that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting where the injuries have just been piling up for years now. So is this just straight up like a Louisiana-type curse situation? Do you think, like, what's causing
Chris
this?
Chris Paul. I mean, I told you that. Since he left town, I mean, the moment he left town, this has happened. He got a voodoo doll down on Dauphine, and he has put a few holes in it. It has never let up. But you think about the moment he left is when Eric Gordon came, and immediately was injured for the entire season. And it has continued at a miraculous pace ever since. I mean, I guess you've probably been living here the entire time. But it's pretty much coinciding also when I moved here. And it's been unbelievably bad.
No, I know. It's just their snake bit or something. People want to blame the medical staff, and I'm sure there's something to do with it. But at a certain point, you know, Davis gets injured in warm-ups the other night. There's not much you can do about that, to be honest. And then, of course, after it's already kind of hurt, he just goes and bangs knees with another player. And it's just, how does this keep happening? And it's, you know, a very, very odd situation. So
what was the story there, by the way? Because I watched the game last night, and I thought he kind of banged knees a little bit with Mo Harkless, but then I read something like maybe Lillard said he inadvertently may have banged knees or something. Do you know what exactly happened? Because I haven't read up on it today.
No, so we're recording this podcast on a Wednesday. It's going to come back out on Thursday for everybody. So they haven't practiced and we haven't gotten an update yet, but it sounded like basically either he heard it in warmups and it wasn't feeling right, something happened there, or when he banged his knee with Mo Harkless. But it sounds like when he just stepped out on the court, it was kind of hurting. If you watched him too really closely in the beginning of that Portland game, the beginning, all that he played basically, he didn't look quite right and something looked off. And then when he hit his knee against Harkless, I guess that's when it started to swell. The MRIs were negative, but they said they're swelling. He's going to be listed as kind of questionable day-to-day. And, you know, just early on in the season, we're just kind of like, okay, let's see where this goes.
Not again.
You know, Yeah, basically, you know, I did the preview for the Gambit Weekly here in New Orleans, and it was all fake tweets and things like that. And one of the running jokes I had through this thing was I had the Pelicans official account just keep saying Anthony Davis is questionable to return, and I just copied and pasted it in a couple of times. Of course, exactly. one of the games I did it for is this game against Portland. They're all, like, stamped and dated and everything, and it was like I just randomly put this in on this game because it seemed funny, and then lo and behold, it happened. But when you really think about it, it's not like this was unlikely for Davis based off his history.
Well, we know the history. Let's just, I mean, I can go off the top of my head. I have this memorized. He missed 18 games in year one. He missed 15 in game two. He missed 14 in game three. He missed 21 in game four. Last year, he was relatively healthy. He missed seven. But even all of those games, I could give you another 20 to 25 that he came out in the first quarter. Look at 26 now. Because this is another game that will not be seen as a game missed, but he played five total minutes. And they also affect his stats a little bit. But I know that you can't control injuries, and I know they're not fake injuries, but there comes a point where you got to be like, wow, this guy does get injured a little freakishly more than most other people. And then, granted, none of them have been catastrophic. I mean, we've seen some of those come down the pike in New Orleans, but. But, you know, there comes a time like, wow, is this a sneaky good player? I mean, he is one of the top 5 to 10 players in the league, in my opinion. I think most people in the Orleans would agree with that. But I'd love to see him play, you know, one year, maybe 80 games. That'd be just beautiful to watch. And then him and DeMarcus could play together for about 75 of those. And then we could see what really might be able to happen as opposed to wondering what could have been.
Yeah, you know, he had a career high in games played last year, which was nice, and everyone finally thought maybe he's got past all these injuries. And then in game four, he comes out and this happens. And look, it's not like his fault or anything. He just gets dinged up, and this is how it goes, unfortunately. But I know people don't like to call or don't want to see him called injury prone, but the biggest stat is how many games has he left early in and never come back in? He's tough and will try and play through it, but those still start piling up, and it makes you wonder at a certain point, so I get the criticism there.
There are a lot of games that he's left and not come back. And I know that he's probably wanted to come back at least half of those, you know. I mean, and they're just being safe. I know Monty was very
– I was going to say, early in his career under Monty, they just wouldn't let him even if he thought he could go back in.
Right, no doubt. And they were protecting that commodity, and it was probably the best thing for him. And obviously, you know, it's just a different day and age. I mean, you're younger than me, and I hate to do that get-off-my-lawn thing, but it's – you know, I had Karl Malone on our show a couple months ago, and he was really just angry adamant about it. You know, it's like, and I know the younger guys listening to this will say, hey, it's a different, you can't expect the same things. But, I mean, he was just flat out saying, I just don't understand these guys that just take days off or they come out of games with these little injuries. And Carl is just a unique man, but I know there's other people like him. The ultimate get off my lawn guy is Charles Barkley. He'll say the same thing. But the fact of the matter is these players today are a lot more coddled than the ones of years past. And you have to remember, Carl missed a total of like 14 games his entire career. And this guy was all NBA 16 different times. I mean, you let that sink in. 16 different times he was all NBA, and most of those were all first team. And he is also a guy that's the second lead scorer in the NBA. So when he talks hockey, do listen to him a little bit.
No, of course. Absolutely. I remember the show. And, you know, that's what you get. All these older players kind of look at these guys and are kind of pointing fingers and be like, what are you doing? And I think as fans, I think people want to see them out there. There's a reason the NBA had to come in and put in these rules kind of about restricting rest and expand the schedule a little bit, make it longer to allow for fewer back-to-backs to prevent situations like this so that these guys do play more because they know they're capable of playing and they're just being rested, unfortunately. And the NBA is trying to find a way to combat that.
What do you think about the season going forward? I'm going to play an interview with you for a second because, you know, the fans, and it's I hate to say this because, you know, I kind of go both ways on this when people say this is a must win. And when they were 0-2 and they were playing the Lakers and other people would say, how can you say not that I put that on Twitter, but I saw people that did. And others would do the normal comeback. There's no must wins in an 82-game season. But I actually think that was a must win. I actually think tomorrow night, which would be tonight when people listen to this, against Sacramento is a must win. Because, I mean, we've seen
what's happened when this team gets down, you know, when they're 1-10 or 0-8 or, you know, these, and it just starts to fester itself and you find ways to lose close games instead of finding ways to win. That's why I was very encouraged, even though I was disappointed after they blew such a huge lead to the Lakers, that they found a way to win that game. Last night, it was disappointing, but encouraging at times, and then discouraging again. You and I were texting because I said, okay, here it comes. They ended up letting them have a double-digit lead, and all of a sudden they came back, and not only came back, but took a lead, only to see it just go back away. So tomorrow night, which is tonight, Sacramento, this is the type of game you cannot lose. And I know that Sacramento's capable of beating anybody, especially on their home court. But the fact is they come home to the Cavs at 1-4. You're facing 1-5 right directly down the pike. I'm really worried about that kind of situation. So I want your thoughts on it.
Yeah, okay, let me reset everything here and direct everyone. By the way, you guys all know, before I answer the questions, you guys all know there is a LockedOnPelicans.com now. Be sure to check it out. I've got all the team of writers making their writing debuts on the site right now. It's a pretty exciting time. We're looking at Anthony Davis in headbands. We're talking about Rajon Rondo and the point guard situation. I've got one up on Ian Clark and how he gets wide open for three by staying level with the ball. Little things like this that make you a smarter Pelicans fan. Definitely make sure you check out LockedOnPelicans.com daily. Okay, so to answer your question, Scott, like, is this a must-win game, you know, tonight against the Kings? And I think it is. And look, the team's 1-3, and they've won the game they're supposed to, and they've lost the three against good teams. But we were all expecting them to lose to the Warriors, but they could have won that game against Memphis. With or without Anthony Davis, they played well enough to beat Portland, and they took the lead late in the game at one point. And if you just look at them as a team that should beat the teams they're supposed to beat, to me that doesn't scream a team that should be or making the playoffs. And that's what's disappointing. It was with the Saints when they started 0-2, when people were like, well, they'll be good. Or they started to win some games when they got to 2-2. It was, do it against a top team, and then I'm going to pay attention to you. If the Pelicans can't do that, they're not a playoff team. And they need to string some wins and get some consistency out of themselves because they haven't gotten that thus far, as we talked about in the beginning. They've kind of been up and down. And so when you look at this game against the Kings, yeah, absolutely, it's got to be a must win because this is a team you should beat. At least that's kind of my opinion with everything.
I love that you brought the Saints in and they throw LSU into the local sports fan around here because both those teams were up against the ropes. I mean, big time. Even more so than I think the Pelicans are now. They were 1-2, the Saints were. Now all of a sudden I'm looking at the television this morning and they're ranked in pro football rankings, you know, the mythical rankings people do at number 5 in the league, on a 32 team. So quite a change in just a week. Almost shoot the same way. They lose to Troy, and all of a sudden, they beat two pretty good football teams. I'd say one of them really good, and then another one on the road that's usually good. So they can turn around. And I'm looking at the Pelicans a little the same way, but they're going to have some help as far as injuries go. They can't have Davis sitting for an extended amount of time. They can't have Rajon Rondo's injury lingering any more than they already think it is. Those kind of things. But going forward, I still have high hopes for the fact of the matter is, right, those two teams I just mentioned, LSU and the Saints, prove that they can beat good teams, which gave maybe the national pundits a reason to think, okay, maybe they're on the right track. Until the Pelicans do that, no one's going to take them seriously.
Yeah, it was like when people were saying the Saints are back when they were 2-2 and their two wins were over Carolina with Cam Newton, who looks absolutely horrible as a quarterback this season, and then the Dolphins in London, who didn't play well. And it was like, I'm not believing in this team yet. You know, there's the top four seeds in the Western Conference, I think, are set. I think everyone in the world really likes the Warriors, the Rockets, the Thunder, and the Spurs. And after that,
I'll say three of those are set. I'm not completely believing in the Thunder yet. Okay, but go ahead.
No, that's fair. But you know that you're assuming they're going to make the playoffs here, right?
Like, yeah,
you're going to definitely put them in the top eight in the Western Conference. But after that, the next
I do believe that, yes.
There's four seeds really up for grabs that about eight teams are competing for. The Nuggets are on the same level as the Pelicans. So are the Clippers. So is Portland. So is Memphis. And you can kind of list maybe one or two more teams there. And if you want to get into the playoffs, you can't just say it's okay if we lose to teams that are good. You've got to beat good teams at a certain point. Maybe not in the NFL where you're playing a 16-game schedule, but out of 82 games, you can't just go and beat the teams you're supposed to beat. That's not going to get you in. And I don't like that kind of mentality of fans are looking, well, it's 1-3 and this was expected. No, you guys were expecting playoffs. So that means beat a team that's in the playoffs and show that you deserve to be in there and that you're a team that can compete and get in there over an 82-game schedule.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we can say all we want about the West being tough. I mean, it is tough. We know, but, you know, this is a situation you have to deal with every day. I mean, I look at teams like Utah Jazz. I watch the way they play basketball. I love it. I mean, I'm not saying that they're the greatest team in the world. They lost their best player. But the way they play basketball, the way they're coached, overcomes a lot of the deficiency. Yeah, they play great defense. They move so well without the ball. You see great ball movement, and you get open shots and from guys that most of the casual fan will never have heard of. And that is what I'm hoping for in the city of New Orleans. You have such inconsistency here with Etuan Moore, for instance. Let me just talk from the top of my head. You know, he gets 0 points one game, and then he comes back and has that great, I thought, a pretty darn good game against the Lakers, I believe, with 19 or so. And then last night, once again, he played a lot of minutes, but for the most part, other than three or two, he was invisible. And it's just guys like that that I feel are capable of doing so much more that you're only getting, you know, an occasional good game.
Yeah, it's that inconsistency. I think, I think Etuan Moore might be the most average player in the NBA right now, which is not a bad thing. There's some pretty bad players in the league in terms of comparing them to other guys, but it's just you have Dante Cunningham, who's a starter who gives you under like 7 minutes a game, and it's just, what are you supposed to do here? And, you know, everyone wants to believe in this team because they have two all-stars in Davis and Cousins, but and you need two or three all-stars to win, make a deep playoff run, let's say. But you also need some backcourt help. And these bigs can't get the ball themselves. And we've seen it, especially this year, where entry passes to them in the low post are really bad. And sometimes you have trips where these guys don't really get the ball because we don't have players that can do it. And it's like you said, guys like Etuan Moore and others with a situation like that. But what have you thought about Ian Clark so far this year? This is a guy who I think people really liked the signing coming in for a near vet minimum deal. It's a lot of energy. He's a shooter. Like, I think he's looked good, but what have you seen from him this year?
Exactly. This is you and I talked right after he was signed, and I know we were both high on him, particularly at the price. I thought that was a steal. And right now, I mean, he's been fairly consistent. I mean, I didn't think he had a great game last night, but I thought he's been one of the glue pieces early on. And I love what he brings. I mean, heck, he's averaging a point less than the guy that's making $24 million more, All right. So I think you're getting good value on Ian Clark. Listen, for people that don't know Ian Clark, I know your listeners are mostly very savvy. They do know, but here's one of the things that they may not know. I mean, this guy was the defensive player of the year when he was at Belmont in his conference. I mean, he is a 3-and-D player. Shooting over 53% from the three-point line this year already, 56% from the floor. So I don't know how much more you can ask from this guy. If you and I were hoping earlier in the year that he would get – now, this is before the Rondo injury. I said if Ian Clark gets about 20 minutes a game, I think we'd get some great production. And if I'm not mistaken, I think he's getting even more than that, like 25 now. Probably a lot has to do with Rondo not being in. But when you ask me how he's doing, he's one of the bright spots on this team so far.
No, like that you can't complain about anything he's done right now, really. Yeah, he is getting right at basically 25 minutes per game. He's averaging 10 points, and he's hitting two threes a game. That's perfect in a reserve role, and I think you might eventually see him maybe crack the starting lineup depending. And a lot of that has to do with Drew Holiday, which we haven't even touched on yet, but you mentioned he's having a rough year, and it hasn't even just been these first four games. Things have been really rough since this team traded for DeMarcus Cousins. I have some theories, and I've thrown them out on the podcast a lot as to why, but what do you think's going on? This is a guy who's shooting 18% from three this season. He shot 30% after the trade last year. How does someone who was a good shooter before that all of a sudden turn around and just forget how to do this?
He just doesn't know his role. I mean, honestly, it's just he looks lost out there. And I don't want to come down too hard on Drew. I like the guy, but it's been tough to watch. The Memphis game was just brutal. I mean, I have to admit the Golden State game. I watched as much as I could. I was on the road working, and I did watch a good bit of it. And I didn't see a lot of greatness there, but I think the fact that he had to play mostly the point in those two games because Rondo being out, I think, you know, he's okay at the point. That's it. I mean, he's okay. He doesn't get in and distribute in the lane. I mean, he can get to the hole, but when he gets to the hole, he's not the kind that is great at looking out at the open guy, the open ball that's getting spacing that may be setting up for a three. He's good at finishing, and I like when he does that. That's why I like him at the two. And I'm relieved to at least say we have a veteran point guard in there now that you know, that's playing some minutes. I want to see what Rondo can do. I really do. I know Rondo's head off the court, especially when a team is losing, is not good. But if they can get in a winning situation, I think it is. But Jameer Nelson right now, who I believe has gotten 24 and 31 minutes in the two games he's played, he can get the ball out. But Rondo, that's him, just seems like he's lost. He had a couple of good games last year but 2 out of 25 ain't going to cut it after Boogie came to New Orleans. And one of those games, I remember he was just phenomenally bad. I mean, a close game, and all these games when they were real close to the end, he was dribbling the ball off his foot, you know, on the game winner, and it just was ugly. It's been kind of the same so far this year. I mean, he's gotten 14 points the last couple of games, 13 the game before that, and then only 4 in that stinker opening game. But the only game I would consider him playing well in would be the Laker one.
Oh, yeah. No, it's been rough this year. And, I mean, the Pelicans kind of had no choice but to re-sign or bring in talent. But if he's going to play this badly and he's averaging 11.3 points per game and 5.3 assists, which actually kind of look good on paper, I guess. But, man, he can't make an entry pass. He can't get the ball to some of these guys. And then, like you said, he's just very indecisive. And it's like, what am I supposed to do while I'm out here? And I think he still has some of that point guard mentality in him where, you know, okay, I got the ball. Let me create for others as opposed to just go and attack and score because that's what he can do well. At least the defense has been there at times. Man, the Pelicans, for giving out a $126 million contract, they're getting killed by him right now, pretty much, because he's clocked in the future. Imagine this: if Boogie walks after this season, and all of a sudden you're left with Drew Holiday and Davis, and then Davis decides he wants out, and this team's left with just Drew Holiday on that massive deal for 2 more years. That's a pretty bleak future, isn't it?
And that's Joe Johnson, like when he was when the Hawks were starting to try to implode a little bit when they let him go to I guess it was New Jersey, maybe Brooklyn Nets at that point. It's feeling a little like that to me. I know this is a different age, but still $26 million is $26 million, and that is a ton of money. And I know they had the time to do it. I mean, listen, I had Dell on my show right before this deal was done, and he said that was our main priority. And he doesn't talk a lot. You know that. And I kind of know him off the court a little bit too, so he opened up a little bit. But he just says, listen, we have to have this guy. This continuity is one thing. But the other thing is there's just not a lot of options. And if we want to go to the playoffs, you know, we're going to have to overpay. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, Drew is a California guy. I mean, he has his choice of going to a lot of places. There are teams that want him. And for the Pelicans to keep him, it took a couple of things. It took Boogie and ADA to recruit him hard, which they did, and they like Drew. But B, they had to pay him a lot, and there was no way he was going to take anything, you know, under $25 million. I mean, there was time that we were thinking this thing might get up to 30 or even more because they were that desperate to keep him because, you know you have to have 3 now to go to the play, or at least do something in the playoffs. I'm not saying to go to it, but they felt that that was their best choice. So I don't blame them for overpaying him. It is what it is. They kind of had to do it, and that's one of the things you have to deal with when you're in a market like New Orleans. It's just, no offense, because it's the greatest city in the world. For NBA players, it's not Shangri-La, but it's just you want to see some more production from what you're getting. And I know he's capable. I know he's not going to average 11.3 at the end of the season. This is a guy that can give you 18, no problem. I mean, the year before when he really was having those injury issues, once he finally was getting 29 minutes a game, I remember there wasn't a huge sample size, but it was about 24 games that he got at least 29 minutes. And I went in and added all the stats up. He averaged 23.5 points. He averaged 9 assists and like 7 rebounds. It was really nice. And that's the Jrue Holiday this team needs.
Yeah, and he's shown he's capable of it, which is, I think, what's so maddening to fans who seem to be turning on him a little bit. You said something I want to touch on, though, that's kind of unrelated, probably before we wrap up everything here, about this not being, you know, really a city where players want to come play. And I've heard this from a lot of people. And actually, when I was talking to, I think it was Deuce McAllister for your show one time, he and I were talking about how, like, no one, even big-time athletes in football and anywhere, don't really want to come to New Orleans and play for a variety of reasons. But that's a real big thing when you're kind of, I had one guy claiming people want to come here and play because this is where Harry Connick Jr. is from. And that's like the biggest celebrity you can name coming out of New Orleans. Look, I actually really like Harry Connick Jr., but don't even pretend to me that NBA players are coming to New Orleans because of him. And I was like, this is crazy. That's a very realistic handicap this team and city has kind of, right?
Yeah. I mean, you forgot, like, let me say this just because I had to see it from the other side. I mean, I was in Atlanta, and nothing in Atlanta. I mean, I love New Orleans so much more, but I just, when you're with TNT, you travel around the league, and you get to know, you know, players, and you get to know your family, and you do the same thing. And when I would shop New Orleans as a player representative, it was usually shot down pretty quickly, and that's just, it's just not a glamour city to a lot of folks. I mean, obviously, during that point, I was going, you know, Katrina was in the aftermath and a lot of things like that. But when the NBA players, they take big market immediately. Or if it's not a big market, it's a very successful small market like San Antonio, but New York, LA, Chicago, places like that. That's what they want first. And if not, it better be a winning program.
My mic cut out right there. So, yeah, this is where
am I still here?
I was like, yeah, no, we got it. It's no, that's a very good point. You know, if you've got to build a track record, and this team hasn't done it yet and hasn't had it at all during the time Anthony Davis has been here. And then the 2 years before that with Dell Demps under at the helm, they haven't built that up yet. And if you can eventually start winning and getting in the playoffs consistently and building kind of an identity and getting the city behind you like Memphis did, I got asked this question the other day. What's kind of the fan base that you're most jealous of? And I went out of the box and I picked Memphis because, man, they had an identity that the city just rallied behind. And all of those fans knew they were never going to win a title. I think everyone saw they were never going to win an NBA championship in the grit and grind.
But they
era.
Did something really nice, though. I mean,
how
you're
much
right.
How fun do you think those guys had there? All the fans.
How much what?
How much fun do you think the fans had going to all of those games? And you know when they were going to – yeah, exactly.
And
that's
they all said the same thing. It's a great experience for them. I mean – because once they beat San Antonio, that was the kicker year. Remember? And all of a sudden, it was like, oh, my goodness, we can do this. And they were always in the mix. And that's all a lot of franchises. One thing New Orleans just extended to be in the mix like they were when Chris Paul was around. I'm glad you brought Memphis up because my first thought was OKC. That's a small market that's not San Antonio by any means, but – their rabid fan base, because they had success immediately, they were lucky enough to get, obviously, Durant, and then it was Westbrook, and you had Harden playing with them for a while, so they went to the NBA Finals, and they just were a franchise on a roll, so where they still weren't like the place where every NBA free agent wanted to go. It still was a place that's, oh, okay, if you can't give me this, that's a really nice place to be. And I think this is what New Orleans is striving for, because now you have, like they did, a couple of superstars. But now you just have to see them healthy and playing together and see them win. Because once, and you were at Media Day, just like I was. I'm not sure you were in the room when Boogie was there, but I'm pretty sure you were. But yep. Or maybe it was AD. And AD says, hey, listen, whether we like to think it or not, we're playing this year for DeMarcus Cousins. We're playing to keep him here or want him, for him to want to stay here. And that spoke volumes to me because – listen, as much as they're recruiting to get Jrue Holiday there, well, they're going to have to recruit DeMarcus just as much to get him to stay. And a 33-49 season is not going to get it done. And but the thing is, if you can see progress, and if you see 43 wins, or you see 44, you know, you're in the mix, at least you're having a conversation, you're playing good basketball, And again, your sky is the limit. And that's the bottom line. And I still think these guys are still trying to play with each other, Jake, learn each other. They're far from being there, but I do see a point where I think they can make some magic happen.
Oh, absolutely. But that's also why this game tonight's a must win. You're going up against an opponent that you're better than, that you have more talent than, that you should be able to kind of force your will upon. And this team needs to do it because, like you said, they still need to kind of build some consistency, some chemistry, and get everyone on the same page. And there's no better opportunity to do that than against a very bad team. And what's going to be a very this game's going to be fun to watch because the atmosphere is going to be crazy. But they need to win this one, right?
Can I ask you a question about this game?
Yeah, of course.
Who do you think wants to win this game more, Boogie Cousins or his ex-teammates against Boogie Cousins?
You know,
I think that's a valid question.
It is, and I'm going to say Cousins more because I just wonder if his teammates don't care because that mess in Sacramento is so bad. It's not like they want to play for the owner and their coach and all of these guys to, like, stick it to the dude who the team traded away when he didn't really want to leave. And it was well known that, you know, after this coming season, he would have signed that massive extension there. So if you're them, it's just like, you know, it's kind of like a small town where someone finally escapes and just moves to a bigger city and is even kind of like moderately successful there, but they got out of that like backwoods small town. It's kind of, that's what I view Sacramento right now. And, you know, Cousins maybe wants to stroll back in there with all his, you know, like the rich dude who moved from the small town now gets to go back and flaunt it and being like, shouldn't have all made fun of me when I was in high school and like a dork, which I don't think Cousins probably ever was, but I've lost the analogy here, but that's probably
he's the king of Mobile. You didn't remember that?
Look, I think that's awesome that he's back there doing everything he can with him. It's pretty great. But, yeah, I think he wants to win this. I don't think he cares as much as people are going to try and make it out to be. But, like, we see his personality. His personality is very obvious in who he is, which is a thing I really like about him. He's going to want to win this deep down somewhere.
It would really help. Is there any chance that AD can play tomorrow? Or can I? We'll know more when this actually airs. But
yeah, I know. That's the dangers of doing it the day before. But
at least we're letting people know.
Yeah, well, I think everyone knows it. It's just I want these to be up early. So my mindset behind it is I want it to be up at 6 a.m. every day so that people grab them on their way to work and listen on their drive in. It needs to be up early. You guys, I love you all of my listeners, but I'm not waking up at like 4 or 5 in the morning to record the podcast for you. You know, after away games on the West Coast, I'm up to like 1 a.m. recording sometimes. That's enough. You guys don't get any more from me than that.
No. 4 a.m. is a little tough for anybody.
Yeah. I think maybe there's going to be a chance he plays, but likely knowing the Pelicans, they're going to sit him down and try and keep him healthy for this upcoming game against the Cavs and just figure they have enough to beat Sacramento. And then if you're the coaching staff and you lose, you'd be like, well, we were without AD, and they kind of get a pass. So there's no real reason to play him other than trying to get that win right now. But I don't know if this win against Sacramento is worth, you know, risking something even more with Davis.
Now, are you 100% positive that they have enough to get past Sacramento? I mean, I know Sacramento's probably thinking the same thing. Sacramento's led by a rookie. De'Aaron Fox is leading them in scoring. And when Scal Labissi, second leading scorer, you're right. They might have problems.
Yeah, they have some young talent there that I like, but we saw what Cousins was able to do kind of just on a one-man show against Portland, who has better bigs than, you know, the Kings do. The Kings have some young good ones that could be good eventually, but, you know, right now over any of their guys in a one-game playoff, let's call it, I'm going to take Jusuf Nurkić over anyone else there in Sacramento for at least one game right now. And you saw Cousins go off for 39 points the other night and had a monster game. And you can, when he's dialed in, like you said, he is on another level from anyone else. He showed the other night he's a top 10 NBA player when he wants to be. You think he's going to want to be in this game. Maybe, you know, losing Anthony Davis, they kind of step up a little bit more. In years past, I will say the Pelicans would have gotten crushed by Portland the second Davis walked out of that game. We saw it last year where they end up losing by 30. I forget which team it was. He goes out, the team's deflated, and they got nothing. They showed a lot of fight last night to come back from that deficit and to at least take the lead. I'm not even upset they lost because they showed me something that we wouldn't have seen in years past.
Yeah, we were testing back and forth at the end of the game. Like, I thought, you know, once they got down 11, I was like, oh, they're done. All of a sudden, they go into the next TV break, down one or up one. I was like, what up? So they did show some gumption in this game, and that's an Oklahoma word, but they showed me something, as you said.
Yeah, and so
go ahead.
Yeah, you know, just seeing that against a team in Portland that's very good, and you had them on the ropes for a little bit, you should be able to handle this Sacramento team. I mean, maybe not, but like you should is the way I'm putting it right now.
Well, when you look at this, it's like you got De'Aaron Fox, Gallabessier, Buddy Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Willie Cauley-Stein. Those are your five leading scorers. Ouch. Then you follow with George Hill, Garrett Temple, Zach Randolph, who I do love, Frank Mason III, Justin Jackson. There's a lot of young players in there, and the Pels, they need to have a little pride to just take this thing down and take it down to the next one.
Yeah, exactly. And what happens when you go up against a team with all those young guys, it can be a stiff test because they want to go out and prove themselves, and they're going to throw their best at you because they think this is a winnable game to kind of show themselves. So it's not like this is going to be easy for the Pelicans, but when you, like you said, you kind of ran down their roster there, and I like some of those guys. Everyone loves Garrett Temple, but I'm going to take Ian Clark as a scorer over him almost every single time, at least right now. So, you know, that's kind of the way I see this one here.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. It's been fun, Jake. I hope we can do it again soon, buddy.
Got to wrap up here. Scott, let everyone know where they can find you, your show, all of that.
Man, if you are anywhere on the Louisiana Gulf, Mississippi, Alabama, Florida Gulf Coast, or the entire state of Louisiana and Arkansas and some of East Texas, you're in business because you can catch us on CST, which is Cox Sports Television. It's right by ESPN. It's Channel 37 on Cox. 7 o'clock on Tuesday nights and then noon on Wednesday. And then they give us a bunch of airings over the weekend. It's always random, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But also in New Orleans, if you don't have Cox, if you have DirecTV or, you know, AT&T, Universal Charter, or Cox, you can catch us at 6 o'clock on WLAE. And now that's not just in New Orleans. It goes down the bayou. It goes over to Mississippi. But it doesn't hit all the range that the other station does. But that's Channel 14 on Cox, 32 on DirecTV, Dish, and AT&T, and 11 on Charter. But that's 6 o'clock on Tuesdays. That's in the evening, and not 10 o'clock on Thursday night. So check it out. You know, last week we had Les Miles. We had Will Wade this time. I've had, you know, Alvin Gentry and obviously Del Demps a couple times, and I try to talk a lot of Pelicans. Certainly when the season gets rolling, I know Saints and LSU, it's pretty heavy right now, but we try to get caliber of guests every show. Jake Madison's been on as much as anybody else, and he'll be on again soon as well. So I look forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. Thanks for coming on today.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Thanks to my guest, Scott Alexander. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at @DScottAlexander. That's at @DScottAlexander. Pretty easy. He's always on there talking hoops. He's got a lot of valuable insight. And don't forget to check out his show, Primetime Sports with Scott Alexander, in all of the different places he mentioned, particularly on CST, Cox Sports Television. If you're a Pelicans fan, you're familiar with that channel from back when they were the Hornets and everything. So always good to talk hoops with him. I was very excited about that one. Game tonight, we will have your recap here on Locked On Pelicans tomorrow morning for you. Don't forget, if things aren't showing up on iTunes, just search for the podcast. I'll be tweeting out the direct links as we kind of migrate over to a new host site. So thank you all for listening. As always, I'm your host, Jake Madison, @NolaJake on Twitter, and I'll be back with you all tomorrow.